What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
What's up, Boston?
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
They go to Washington, and here it is. Some actor named Michael Ealy was asked to make the pick, and he couldn't have butchered it worse.
With the 114th pick in the 217 NFL draft, the Washington Redskins select Samaje Perine. Running back from Oklahoma.
That's the best of all. That's the absolute best of
Samaje
all.
Samaje Perine.
Come on.
P&E.
What's P&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 1049 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns play and Austin Talks Sports.
You think we've gotten too radical with our message? Well, I got news for you. You ain't heard nothing yet. And if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory!
Yeah, that will never not be funny.
That is so good.
That will never not be
funny. Any time of the year, that's perfect.
And the fact that he's from right here in Pflugerville, one of these days we have to get Samaje Perine on the program.
What a
and
nice young
talk
man.
To him. He is a
nice
tremendous young man.
Young man.
Samaje Perine!
But the unfortunate part for him is he's such a nice kid from a great family. Nice young man from a great family. But he's from here, but he went to play for the Sooners, and now he's playing for the Redskins. So it's kind of like,
how did he get away? I mean, he's a stone throw away, right?
Stone to throw. I mean, it's right. That's I don't even consider Pflugerville.
What about that Baker Mayfield kid? How did he get away?
Well,
the guy who's been to the Heisman Award like twice.
How did he get away from the cops in Arkansas? Or no, how did he get away? Oh, he didn't.
Oh, he didn't get away from the cops in Arkansas.
But
one dude chased him down.
That's look. I think that goes back to what we talked about earlier on many, many occasions. But you know, this goes to the inconsistency with the coaches at Texas that they somebody should have recruited Samaje Perine, who went on to be the all-time leading rusher in the history
Probably Jack
of Oklahoma.
Recruited him to Oklahoma, by the way.
I know, because he would come in here and be looking for players. But as we talked about earlier, you know, Tom Herman, we all have high hopes and love this what it sounds like from this coaching staff and the alignment. But since 2010, when the floor fell out from under this program, after they'd been in the national championship the year previous, their offensive coordinators since 2010 have been Greg Davis, Brian Harsin, Major Applewhite, Sean Watson, Jay Norvell, Sterling Gilbert. Now it's Tim Beck.
That is zero consistency.
The defensive coordinators in the same time period have been Will Muschamp, Manny Diaz, Greg Robinson, Vance Bedford, Charlie Strong, now Todd Orlando. There is no consistency, which means there's no consistency on the recruiting trail, the type of players you're looking for, the type of people you want.
Yeah, what do you want for your program?
There's no consistency within your terminology, your lingo. And I would say this for the young people at Texas who people will say have underachieved, which you know they have. The program's been 5-7, 5-7. But I'd ask you, if you had a different boss every year for 7 years, and I know these kids are only here for 3 and 4 years, but if you had a different boss every year,
you would know it.
Not just a different boss, but a different boss, and then take your position coach. So then your direct manager.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's confusing. There's
like
no,
a different you every year. That would be weird. Would be a weird deal.
Or different expectations.
Yeah.
Different how you do things are done.
Because every year somebody would come in and say, well, we don't do things this way.
Yeah.
I'd be like, what?
Well, I mean, I can tell you that since Bob Cole and Jason Nasur and this group bought this company, I went through about 4 different owners we did here in about a 5-year period. And that was
You're absolutely right.
Confusing.
And it was. You're absolutely right.
And we could never really build the consistency we wanted. People were in and then out and then in and then out. Well, when the Austin Radio Network was formed, when Genuine Austin Radio bought us, you know, it's been almost 3 years now that we've been the same, and we continue to grow, and the ratings continue to rise, and we've been able to be consistent, and you know, keep the same people in the same places, and grow the shows, and add a midday show, and add things. But I mean, I only bring that example because that's personal. But you know, it's the same thing. If there's no consistency in your program, you're not going to win. And so, yeah, you're going to miss on recruits, and you're going to miss on quarterbacks, and you're going to miss on the details of what go on day to day.
But it should never be that way at the University of Texas.
Should not.
It really shouldn't be. I mean, I'm not tooting a horn because it's like, what have you done for me lately, big University of Texas, what they've done lately in football. But it should never be that way here. I mean, consistent winning. You know why? Because that's why I got Tom Herman's, the big bully from the bully pulpit, and 9 wins this year. I just jumped up another one right now.
Look, I do think Tom Herman's the right coach, and the alignment speak
nine
is
and four.
Right. That would be...
Is that a bowl loss or an 8-4 and a bowl win?
That's a bowl win, too.
So 8 regular season wins.
8-4 regular season bowl win.
Yeah, okay. Bowl win. That's 9 wins. We got 9 wins this year.
All right.
My guy in Vegas forgot to get my bet.
I'm going to let Tom Herman know that you're weeing him, that you're like part
of it. Tom Herman would say that, too. Tom Herman wouldn't be afraid to tell you.
Well, he's the coach.
He wouldn't tell you he's going to be 8-4. He said, he'd probably say, that's not enough. Well, I'm trying to keep my job here.
I'm good with it.
What, am I a cake baker?
I'm just saying that the alignment that he preaches is the alignment, if that means consistency for these, it has to be put into this program. It has been a revolving door of people and messages, and even from the top. I mean, when you went from DeLoss Dodds to Steve Patterson for a hiccup and now Mike Perrin, I mean, there's been from the top down, and that has led to a lot of what I think you see, the performances on the field. People want to get after the players, but and the immediate coaches, but this thing needs to bake in, to not steal Charlie Strong's cake baking, but this thing needs to... Well, look, I mean...
Add more yeast.
I mean, you and I have been doing this long enough. When Mack Brown got here in 98, one of the things he said, what is his core value, is he wants consistency in his staff. He wants to build a coaching staff here at Texas that mirrors what Tom Osborne did at Nebraska, what Joe Paterno was all about at Penn State, and you keep this group together. And guess what? He was right about that. He did that. He absolutely did. Outside of Carl Reese leaving, you know, in the early part of the 2000s as a defensive coordinator, and he retired... They replaced him with Dick Tomey and Greg Robinson, which then they both took jobs beyond that. So you got Gene Chizik. Outside of that, it was pretty much consistent. The same coaches, the same people in charge. And to me, that's why when the 2010 season happens and Mack Brown goes 5-7 and fires all the coaches, that's when it all began. That's when Mack started rotating coaches. That's when Mack started trying to get to know new people. He was so comfortable with the coaches and the people around him, the support staff. That led to... the great recruiting, which led to the national championships, which led to 10 years of unprecedented success for the Texas football program.
You know, when other coaches, when coaches around the country, you know, when they look at people like us that do shows and people that have been in sports and all that, and they start talking about numbers, coaches don't like when you're throwing up 9-4s and 10-2s. But they know that's what their business is. That's what your business is.
In the business of winning, yes.
Yeah, you're in the business of winning.
People,
so people around you are going to say 8-4. You know what I'm saying? Or 10-2.
Yeah, Tom Herman would ask, well, why would you categorize it? Why do we have to be so suspicious? Yeah. Well, because we're dudes, and that's what guys
that's
do.
That's what do we do. We put numbers up there.
Whose recruiting class was the best? How many stars does he have?
Yes.
How many games can you win? Yeah, I mean, it's a numbers thing. But
ask Charlie Strong about numbers, because his numbers didn't work out.
I don't care what their record was. They were a poorly coached team, period, across the board.
Absolutely.
And you didn't have to give me a number of what their record was. You had to watch them and say, that is a bad... looking outfit.
Hey, you just had to watch the coin flip.
And how many times did we say last year, whether it was morning show or, you know, pregame, you just felt bad for the players because you could tell they were being undercoached.
They were confused.
The secondary didn't know where they were going, couldn't line up, couldn't shed a block. I mean, it's a poorly coached team.
At the stadium, the grass was really high in the middle because they never ran down the middle of it. So it was growing differently
in the
middle of the field.
Pretty sure that's turf.
Oh, it's turf. I'm sorry. Turf got a little high down the middle.
You have snakes in there or something?
Snakes in the
grass.
Let's
get to your headlines. We'll pick it up on a Tuesday. But thanks to Samaje Perine for launching that fun conversation. We're going to have to get him in here. Maybe this offseason.
I get that done.
Let's do that.
Yes.
Let's do that. Love to have him in and let him hear that guy butchering his name on draft night. Still shame on that actor for not being able to get that name right. Let's go to the news. Ticket City Update Desk we go. And yes, the NBA held their first ever awards show last night in New York City. Handing out the hardware, the top award of the night, the MVP. Your final three were Oklahoma City's Russell Westbrook, Houston's James Harden, and San Antonio's Kawhi Leonard. The commissioner made the announcement.
And the winner of the 2017 Kia NBA Most Valuable Player Award is Russell Westbrook.
That's right, Russell Westbrook, your winner last night of the big award of the night. Draymond Green was named Defensive Player of the Year. That ended Kawhi Leonard's two-year reign. Also last night, Giannis Antetokounmpo, the most improved player, the Greek freak. Houston sharpshooter Eric Gordon named the sixth man of the year. Head coach Mike D'Antoni, the league's coach of the year. Rookie of the year is Bucks second round draft pick Malcolm Brogdon, who brought home that hardware. Baseball, Rangers, boy, they continue to frustrate the faithful, don't they? How about a four-game series opening in Cleveland last night, facing the Indians, who over the weekend got swept by the Twins and scored a grand total of 2 runs in the 3 games in the losses to the Twins. And Texas jumped out to a 9-2 lead and were absolutely cruising. Then Cole Hamels and that Texas bullpen went bad. The Tribe erupted for 13 unanswered runs when the dust had settled. It was a 15-8 loss for Jeff Banister and the Rangers.
I think the biggest thing is we gave up, I think, 28 plate appearances with runners in scoring position. That's the real story, is that the inability to stop any of the bleeding.
They certainly could not. Game two of that series is tonight. First place Astros had the night off. They open a series with Oakland tonight at Minute Maid Park. 4 days of All-Star game voting remaining. It looks more and more like all three of Houston's young stars will be All-Star starters at the Midsummer Classic. Houston second baseman Jose Altuve, shortstop Carlos Correa, and outfielder George Springer all maintaining a strong hold on the top spots in their respective positions. In Monday's AL voting update, each actually doubled his lead over the past week. All-Star game is July 11th at Marlins Park in Miami. College baseball, tough and tight last night, but the Florida Gators are now a win away from their first ever national championship in baseball. They edged LSU 4-3 last night in game one of that best of three series. Gator starter Brady Singer, the story, struck out 12 Tigers in that game. That is a College World Series record over seven strong innings. Game two tonight at 8 o'clock. And some developing news from Waco, Texas, where Baylor University confirmed yesterday in their own court filing that in addition to a criminal probe by the McLennan County District Attorney and Texas Rangers that is ongoing, the NCAA is also conducting an ongoing and pending investigation into the school in the wake of the sexual assault scandal that led to the firing of football coach Art Briles, also the AD, and the departure of the school president. Baylor officials acknowledge that the investigation is ongoing while asking a judge to protect the school's communications with the NCAA from attorneys for several women who have sued the nation's largest Baptist university. And that's the news. That's what we got.
That's what we got. We got John McEnroe creating, just by him just being honest, a little bit of a blank storm here after yesterday. I think there are people that really, you know, what he said. I think he said a number. I mean, he could have left that out, but I don't really care about the number. I just think he was being honest in what he was saying about Serena Williams. I don't find that offensive or being discriminatory towards females. It's just, I would say the same thing. I wouldn't put a number on it, but I would have thought the same thing.
Well, let's let the folks listen to the audio, and then he was on CBS this morning, continuing to promote the book, and then maybe being asked to apologize. But here is what he said. He was on NPR this weekend, National Public Radio. He's got a book that's out, which, of course, he's doing the promotional tour. And they were just talking about his book, and the host of the show asked him a question about Serena Williams, and you can hear his answer.
Let's talk about Serena Williams. You say she is the best female player in the world in the book.
Best female player ever, no question.
Some wouldn't qualify it. Some would say she's the best player in the world. Why qualify it?
She's not, you mean the best player in the world, period?
Yeah, best tennis player in the world. You know, why say female player?
Well, because if she played the men's circuit, she'd be like 700 in the world.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right. So that's his opinion. She asked him. She led him into that conversation. He gave his opinion.
Yes.
Oh, you can hear her happiness when she says, "Oh, I think so." She's like, "Oh yeah, baby, my name's about to be famous now."
And especially when he said 700. That's the one that got her right there. That's the one that made her feel like, "Oh no."
She's smiling in the mic. She's like, "Oh yeah."
But you know what though? I mean, a lot of people like her, she believes that. We've gotten texts from people that think that there doesn't need to be clarification. Why do you have to say female? Why can't you just say best? Well, because she's not the best player in the world, and she's not the best player of all time. She is the best female player of all time.
Correct.
Which we would all agree. But there are people who don't believe that that's okay. That you why do you have to clarify? Why do you have to put people in boxes, as they would say?
He was answering a question.
Right. Oh, I know. And that's the frustrating part. It's like, no, well, because as I said earlier, we're talking about that you're, you know, somebody needs to jump me because I said we have a female boss, and they asked the question, why do you have to clarify? Because my boss is a female. I'm just for the sake of identity and identifying who she is.
Identified, she's a female, yes.
Yeah. She's
still my boss.
She's a great boss. Yes. I absolutely love working for her. But she is. Just like Bob Cole, one of our owners, is a guy. He's a radio host. But people don't want to like break down these walls and protect like everybody's the same and we're all these snowflakes. And
no, we're not.
There's no differences. Well, actually, there are. Yeah, really.
There's some real differences, yes.
Doesn't make us different. Doesn't make us wrong, but... So McEnroe was asked that question. Let's finish up with that little short one. On the way to the break in this interview with NPR, he had this to say about Serena and the conversation they were having.
So maybe at some point a women's tennis player, you know, can be better than anybody. I mean, I haven't seen it in any other sport, and I haven't seen it in tennis. And I suppose anything's possible at some stage.
because of course that interview went on and she kind of jumped him and pulled him to it. And he's like, well, maybe someday we could have it.
But not right now.
Not this second, if you're asking my opinion, which is what you did. You asked and I answered. And then so today he was on CBS this morning. I think we have a little of this from this morning on CBS, kind of further clarifying the conversation.
No. I'm just waiting. Would you like to apologize?
No. But the offer is this, is because it seems in tennis, unlike other sports, that they're always asking about how women, they always ask me how I would do for someone. Why isn't this old bag John McEnroe, how would he do against Serena?
Well, why would you even ask him to apologize? I don't understand that. What would he be apologizing for?
By the way, that old dude in his heyday at her age would have worked her.
No, well, not now.
I'm just saying, no, at her, and when he was playing at his...
Oh, in his prime?
At his prime, he would have worked her.
He did say last year he thinks he could beat Serena Williams.
Well, that's fine. I wouldn't mind saying that, but that's his opinion. I don't understand this idea that you have to apologize for something you were asked and you answered. You can disagree with his opinion, too. You're perfectly welcome to say, you know what? I don't agree with John McEnroe on that, but that's okay. He didn't say anything disrespectful about Serena Williams.
Now he's held to the fire because he mentioned
that. I'd like to know if you'd like to apologize. I think that was Gail, Oprah's best friend.
Gail didn't come through with that.
Yeah, okay.
How'd she get that gig
Oprah
anyway?
Oprah got it for her.
Wait a minute. No, wait a minute.
Oprah got that gig for her.
Wait a minute. You don't think she got that on her own merits?
Well, I'm not saying she's not talented. I'm saying that she wouldn't.
You're saying Gail's not talented?
She wouldn't have that job without Oprah Winfrey because she was Oprah's best friend or is Oprah's best friend. Was on the show all the time.
You know Oprah better than anybody.
Hey, Dr. Phil owes his show to Oprah. Dr. Oz owes his show to Oprah. There's that guy that
what? There's another one.
That home designer Nick Berkus. He owes his show to Oprah.
And Stedman, what does he do?
Nothing. Goes out with Oprah.
That's it.
Lives in a big penthouse in Chicago. Does well for himself. Doesn't put himself out there.
Yeah, he doesn't say very much. He's pretty smart about what he does. His business, like picking up the dry cleaning and stuff like that. He's pretty cool with that.
I don't think he does that.
You don't think so?
He's got a career of his own.
What does Stedman do? Do we ever find out what that dude does? Does he have like a real job?
I guess he has a real job.
Being with Oprah.
Well, no, he's got a career, but it's not the success of Oprah, but who could marry be with Oprah that would be more successful than her? Who is that person?
He's a stay-at-home dad with no kids, man. He lives the dream.
That's what BK's looking for.
Are you looking for that hookup like that?
Oh, I want the no wife and no kids aspect.
Well, they're not married.
They're not married.
I mean, they're legally they're partners. Yeah, they've been together long enough that legally he could get half.
If John McEnroe didn't want to answer the question, could she have pulled a John McEnroe?
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Yeah. How could she have done that? Then we'd have some real controversy.
Now we'd have had some fun.
What if Gail would have gone on that one?
Yes.
Well, clearly, even in the NPR interview, which I've heard the extended form, he was caught off guard, and he understood, there's a little bit of a gotcha game going on here that I just kind of walked into this, and I just gave my opinion, and now here come the claws. And so he is understanding that it's a new world order, and you kind of have to abide. So he was trying to be as – if she asks you, would you like to apologize, you say, for what? For what am I apologizing?
I think he did perfect. He said, no.
No, I wouldn't want to apologize.
No.
But then he tried to elaborate, and no. No, I do not like to apologize.
Is Gail the best talk show female host ever?
No. No.
By the way, it was Nora O'Donnell who asked the question.
Oh, it was Nora?
You guys
Nora.
Were on a roll, so I wasn't going to stop
wasn't
you.
Wasn't Gail? But Gail was there, right?
You let us get loose?
Gail's on that show.
Yeah, I
is Gail
so.
On there?
Yes, she is. I saw her. I saw the video.
Yeah, Gail's there.
Gail's there.
But Nora was the one who asked.
Gail's Oprah's best friend. Nora O'Donnell asked that question. So to
who
Nora.
Who is that?
Nora O'Donnell?
Is that Rosie's sister?
It's not Rosie's sister, is it?
No, no, no. She is. She's a longtime media news correspondent, but she's also married to Chris O'Donnell, who does that show on NBC. Or
I got what Stedman does. He
what?
Someone says whatever Oprah tells him to do.
Come on, man.
That's what he does. Come on, man.
All these other folks gravy training off of Oprah, getting gigs because of her. He's fine. He's cool.
Why'd she give up her show anyway?
She wanted
life
her own network.
Good.
She wanted her own network.
What's that working for? She's still getting paid?
She does okay.
Yeah, I guess she does.
She's got the own network, the Oprah Winfrey Network. She does whatever she wants on that network now.
She was great in The Color Purple. She's fabulous.
What?
BK, that's not on your list either. I'm pretty sure you've never seen The Color Purple. Neither is he.
Stedman is an American educator, author, businessman, and speaker, primarily known as the longtime boyfriend of Oprah Winfrey.
Say that again. Did you say he's an educator?
He's an American educator.
He teaches third grade. That's what that he is. Yes.
No, he doesn't teach third grade. He writes
says
books.
An educator.
He's a businessman. He's a speaker. Went to Ball State University.
Wait a minute. Does it say that he really has a job? What is his real job?
Primarily known as the boyfriend of media mogul Oprah Winfrey.
Okay. That's what he says.
You can put that on his grave.
His title is a CEO. CEO.
Okay. Of?
Of. Hold on. B and C Associates.
We got to get into that.
He works on behalf of black causes and hobnobbed with many distinguished clients.
I work on behalf of black causes. What is he? Why is he getting that distinction? What are you, nuts?
Well, he's the CEO of Black Causes.
The hell is the CEO of Black Cause? What does that mean?
A real thing?
You just made that up, right?
No, in 1988, Graham created S. Graham & Associates, a Chicago-based corporate and educational marketing and consulting firm.
Huh.
And he works on behalf of black causes, including promoting Maya Angelou and African activist Winnie Mandela.
Okay, well, I listen to Maya Angelou. I got some of her poems and stuff.
So I have to clarify. Not only did Oprah get jobs for Gail, Phil, Dr. Oz, Nate, that whole career has been created by Oprah. That's all
right
her
here.
Friends.
Yes,
right?
That's all her friends. Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't Maya Angelou? She's dead.
Oh, dead or alive? I'm going to say she's
dead, isn't she?
Yeah, I'm going to go dead.
She's 86. No, she died in 2014.
There it is. That would have been bad.
Yes.
So that's his last big client, the one who died in 2014? Come on, Stedman Bailey.
How do we get to Stedman? How do we get this way?
I don't know. I just know that, you know, who wouldn't sign up for that gig?
What, to be Oprah's boyfriend?
I mean, she likes Gail more than she likes Stedman anyway. She hangs out with him more. They run around. You don't remember the show. They used to travel. They used to do road trips together.
He knows everything about this show, BK. This is so funny. He would leave the show in the mornings go home and make sure he caught Oprah to get up on the book of the month.
Listen, I've got three kids. They're now all teenagers. Yes. Back in the day, they weren't all teenagers.
And happy birthday to Griff.
Yeah, Griffin's 19 today.
Yes, happy birthday. He's up by now.
No, he's not. No. Back when I was... not much older than you, BK. We had three little ones running around the house. And so I'd go home from the morning, I was there.
He did lunches, he did dinners.
Oh, yeah. And then, then as they got older, they'd come home from school at about 3 o'clock, right? I'd walk up to the elementary school, walk them home, whatever. And then I'd watch Oprah.
He would turn on Oprah. He knew all the stuff.
Wouldn't get home until after 5 or so, so I got to get dinner going.
Did that do Book of the Month Club? He knew all that stuff.
It was always the same. It was the first 30 minutes of Oprah, and then it was Pardon the Interruption.
Wow.
That's what it was. So I learned all about Gail and their road trips.
You know how I know you're gay?
Nope, just a dad.
Just a dad, stay-at-home
dad. Just a dad.
Watching Oprah.
Just a dad.
It's a beautiful thing.
So yeah, Oprah.
Now, oh yeah, he used to come in and tell us all about Oprah. I'd be shaking my head over here going, how the hell did you know that? Well, Oprah said that. Oprah said this.
I do remember coming in one morning and saying, you know what? Oprah's going to get this guy Barack Obama elected president.
You did say that.
Because she would have him on the show.
Oh, he got her. That's right. She got him that gig.
I'm telling you. She's a powerful person.
So is he one of the black causes that Stedman worked for?
He was, yes. That was one of the causes.
I mean, a lot of people learned a lot about Barack Obama
through
and Michelle Obama through the Oprah show. Don't diminish the power of that. And she has a legion of stay-at-home dads like me.
Did you used to call her the Queen of America? She's our queen, right?
Oh, she. I mean, if she would say a name of a book, it would go to the New York Times bestseller number one.
I know. She had a bunch of mutts that had books that were horrible, and she said she read them. They went right to the top.
Well, remember, she got sued by the Texas beef industry, remember, that whole deal? And that's where she met Dr. Phil.
What, she didn't like the meat here or something, right?
She said something bad about
Texas meat or something.
Texas meat or hamburgers.
Kirk Herbstreit sausage.
How powerful she was. She said something about Texas beef or a hamburger, and the sales went in the toilet. So they said, well, you can't do that.
Dude,
she said it happened.
She got sued for that. That's right. She was the queen.
She was. She was. And I don't know how we got into this conversation.
I don't either. We need to move on, though.
Sorry, my fault. Stedman. We'll be back. B&E on the Horn. We'll pick up the conversation in a different vein.
Black
when we
causes.
Come back.
My goodness. The hell is that?
Blame John McEnroe. It's B&E on the Horn.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Hey, someone on the text line reminded me that and us and you, show the people audience, that Oprah also launched the career of Ty Pennington. Ty Pennington, who was the
I had to ask who that was. I don't know who he was.
Second baseman for the Los Angeles Angels.
No. Total home makeover guy. Remember they'd go in and they'd take needy families and rebuild their house for them?
Oh, and then come in and...
Move that bus. Yeah, that guy. She started that.
Oh, I always yell that whenever Cliff Pennington of the Angels comes up to bat and I'm at the game. I yell, move that bus as loud as I can.
Really?
Nobody has any idea what the hell
that
I'm talking about.
That show was a blockbuster when it first came on for
a while.
It did.
For the first 2.5 to 3 years, it was really good.
Pretty tearjerker, man. They'd go in, these people would have horrible circumstances and sick kids. And
that's right.
Whatever the situation was, and they would take this junky house they lived in and make it into this beautiful house.
Oh yeah, they got rid of that for JoJo, who they're the ones who have all kinds of money, and
JoJo.
Those two twin dudes, JoJo and Bill down there
Chip
in Waco,
well,
Chip and JoJo.
But Move That Bus was on ABC, over the air television,
right?
Sunday nights, it was one of their blockbuster shows. I mean, Flip That House does well, but it's on paid for cable and. You know, got to go to whatever.
And the two twin boys, those guys.
Property Brother, they're all on that channel. But no, that was a bonanza, man. And that's Oprah. Yeah, Oprah.
I didn't realize that.
Well, it turns out, Oprah is also a friend of one Vince Young. This is true?
No,
they're friends.
It ain't true. It ain't true.
I'm reading the story right here.
It ain't true!
That is true. But here's the deal. Just this morning, a story has dropped from Sports Illustrated and SI.com. If you still receive Sports Illustrated in a hardcover, you're going to get one this week with Vince Young on the cover. And Vince is the cover boy of their Where Are They Now issue. And in the story written by Greg Bishop went to Canada while he was trying out for Saskatchewan after talking to dozens of his friends and family back here. And he wrote the story, and I've just now started to sift through it. It's pretty interesting. In it, he admits a lot of his own mistakes with his finances, not paying close enough attention to what he was doing. There's series in there about Jeff Fisher and how his career just collapsed. And I don't even want to say he blames Jeff Fisher, but he just kind of tells the story in his own words for the first time. So that's going to be kind of a must read, which we'll dive into. I certainly will after the show because it's a pretty lengthy story, as you can see, Buck. It goes.
Yes.
But pretty interesting that Vince would go here. Sports Illustrated chose the subject. Knowing that Vince still has a huge following and people want to know where Vince Young is. Where has Vince Young gone? This tells that story. But in it, he talks about how he signed his $25 million contract with the Titans and that he had to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 2014 and how where that money all went. He told Sports Illustrated they didn't keep close tabs on his finances during his career, trusting his management of his money to a financial advisor and his uncle. And, of course, he found a bunch of his signatures on a bunch of documents that he says he didn't sign, which led to a lot of lost cash. He did cop in the story. He does cop to the $15,000 tab at the Cheesecake Factory.
Is that one sitting? That's not a,
yeah,
that's
one
not
meal.
A sitting, is
one
it?
One meal, yeah. It says that negligence, along with other unchecked generosity, two cars he bought for one relative, the house he built for his mom in Houston, the $15,000 tab he covered for one meal at Cheesecake Factory doomed him.
Dude, that's a lot of cheesecake, isn't it? $15,000 in cheesecake?
Well, if you go to Cheesecake Factory, you don't only get that. They have one of
Why?
The thickest menus ever.
And that's a lot of sandwiches.
Everyone was eating.
He said coffee,
most,
too.
He says, most I ever spent on a meal in my life. Noting the teammates who were with him downed expensive shots of Louis the Eighth cognac and left with top shelf wine bottles in hand. These guys, Vince is picking up the tab and they're like ordering wine bottles to go on VY's tab. Oh man! But
are his boys, huh?
Yeah, some friends.
Yeah, really.
There you go. So that's where we are with Vince.
So that's coming out. So that's out now.
Well, it's online. If you still get it. Sports Illustrated in the hard copy. It should be in your mailbox whenever your Sports Illustrated typically comes. But will be an interesting read.
Yeah, that thing with his uncle was when he first came out. I mean, he turned all that stuff over to that. I guess you need a person watching that person always, I guess. That's what people that keep their money do. Hire a person to watch the person that they believe is taking care of their money. But he gave a bunch of that to his uncle, let him just do that stuff, and that's a damn shame.
Yeah, I mean, it's in it. Here's an interesting paragraph talking about the early relationship with Vince Young. Because remember, Vince Young took the league by storm as a rookie, and you know, running through the Houston defense, and I believe he was Rookie of the Year his first year. And so, what came easy to him at the college level and the high school level, he got to the NFL, and guess what? It seemed pretty easy as well. He looked like the heir apparent. But in this article, it says Norm Chow liked Young, but also found him immature. One day he'd sit up in front of meetings, hand raised and asking questions. The next day he'd sit in the back, baseball cap pulled down over his eyes. Once Chow and Collins, Kerry Collins, teased Young about his surly demeanor. In response, Young reminded them he was the only guy in this room with the owner's phone number. Obviously, he had been spoiled. Chow says he wasn't willing to put in the extra study that sets quarterbacks apart. He didn't lean on Kerry. He wasn't a bad guy. Heck, he was 23 years old. He was pampered, coddled, whatever word you want to use on it.
He didn't work at it.
No, I mean, that's, you know, for Vince Young's fans who, and there are, because Vince Young took Texas program to heights it hadn't seen in decades.
Ever.
Is arguably the greatest football player most Texas fans have ever watched, and I know you say he's the best you've ever seen.
Right.
But I think, because we've had the debate, and I don't think Jeff Fisher always did right by Vince Young. I don't think there's any
debate
about
it. But he was not the demise of Vince Young.
Well, he didn't help, but he and Norm Chow wanted Matt Leiner.
Right.
And the owner, Bud Adams, wanted to stick it to Houston because Houston passed on Vince to take Mario Williams. And there's no doubt Bud Adams wanted to stick it to the Houston fans and wanted to make Vince Young a star in Tennessee and say, I told you so, over the objections of his own coach and offensive coordinator. And you know, that led to this. So blame the owner. But yes, when you have the owner's number, and after, again, that's why I say when he had the early success, but even the people around him could say, look, this is not sustainable at the way you're living and then, you know, the partying you're doing off the field, you're showing up, you know, half asleep in our meetings. That's not sustainable in the National Football League. It's just not. Your talent eventually, they figure you out.
And yeah, there's a lot of talented people that play
NFL football.
Yes.
A lot of talented people. They're all professionals.
Right.
And a lot of great coaches who will figure out your weaknesses and exploit them. And if you're not working to shore up your weaknesses, you're going to get exposed in this league. And Norm Chow saying that was part of it. And, of course, when things went downward, you know, that was the first time since whenever he experienced failure.
Did he win state championships? He did all that,
yeah.
Did he not?
Yeah, I mean, he had the rough start at Texas where he was competing with Chance Mock. And you and I remember the bowl game when he had the horrible body language when he got benched. And, you know, people were talking about he needed to move
and
in the receiver.
Nobody went by him. Nobody went over to tell him to say anything. No coaches went over to him to be near him.
He just was sulking and moping.
Yes.
But that was the beginning of Vince Young because he came out of that and he was otherworldly.
I mean,
he was Vince Young. He became one of the best leaders the program's ever had. He became the Vince Young that led Texas to back-to-back Rose Bowls and a national championship and an unprecedented run for the program and really set the foundation for what Colt McCoy walked into and picked up where Vince had left off. And as I've always said with Vince, if he had come back for his senior year, which I still think in hindsight he should have done, you know, I remember you and I doing the show from the Rose Bowl, you know, from Los Angeles the day after the Rose Bowl, and, you know, the idea is, look, he's going to strike while the iron's hot. I mean, this guy's stock will never be higher than it is right now, and Houston has the number one pick, so it was almost a, you know, can't-miss opportunity.
You're right.
Well, guess what? In hindsight, he should have come back. He should have played one more year. He would have left as the most decorated, maybe considered the greatest quarterback of all time, because that team was intact. And Colt McCoy,
pretty good team
Colt
coming
McCoy
back.
Came in as a redshirt freshman, and they were good.
Yes.
If Vince had been back, he would have won the Heisman Trophy, barring injury, because he would have come in as the clear front-runner where Reggie Bush had won it the year previous.
And if he'd have stayed healthy, that dude would have taken him to a national championship.
And I think that team would have won another national championship because there was no more – when USC it was losing everybody. So they were the clear front-runner that year. If Vince Young comes back, obviously Ohio State was pretty damn good that year too. But
I just never could understand that.
But he didn't. And think about that, Buck. He would have been two Rose Bowls back-to-back, then back-to-back national titles and a Heisman Trophy – would have been regarded as the best college quarterback of all time.
But did they just let him loose? I mean, did he just say, I got this and I've got great athletic ability? I mean, people around him, coaches and people like that, they didn't seem to influence him very much after, you know, I thought, you know, a lot of times you stay really close with your coach. When things start to tumble down a little bit, you can always pick up the phone or your coach from before picks up a phone and says, dude, you're out of control. You need to get this thing straight now. I mean, there never seemed to be anybody.
Well, because Jeff Fisher didn't have his back. I mean,
well, I'm not
no
talking
about
that. I mean, I'm talking about his college coaches. I mean, seemed to be anybody that ever could pick up the phone and tell Vince.
But you know how people get when they get spoiled and pampered.
I know
Mac Brown called, and you know Mac Brown tried to mentor Vince Young through those days. But are they listening?
Did he not listen to anybody?
Now listen, here's an interesting paragraph from this Sports Illustrated piece, which is out just this morning. It'll be the cover, Where Are They Now, on Vince Young, that says when the subject is broached on Jeff Fisher, it says here, but Young can't help himself. He may believe he's moved on from what transpired in Tennessee, but broached the subject and he appears angry and conflicted. He says, I'm going to expose his ass. He says of Fisher, who he claims stripped all the fun from football, pushing Young until he broke. Whereas Brown had been a father figure to Young always wanted, Fisher says he acted like someone who saddled. Acted like someone saddled with an unwanted stepson. Family members, close friends, even Young's pastor described Fisher as jealous and envious of the quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, it was a bad relationship between the two. But you know who could have fixed the relationship? Vince Young.
Yes.
If you have that much power with the owner and you're doing things right and you're taking care of your business and you're learning the game and working like you have to be a professional, then you have the power to go get Jeff Fisher fired.
And in this day and age, in that day and age,
sure
even
you
then
do.
You have the ability to do that.
Look, everything
you do.
John Elway
can...
got Dan Reeves fired. Why? Because John Elway is doing everything right. Even though Dan Reeves had taken the Broncos to 3 Super Bowls, he made the power play and got Mike Shanahan brought into from San Francisco.
But they always blamed Jeff Fisher. They just said that he was the downfall of his career. I always thought, no, Vince, downfall of your own career.
Right. Take the ownership. I'm not going to sit here and say that Jeff Fisher hurt his career. Sure he did.
He may have hurt it, but
you can even argue Jeff Fisher was out to sabotage his career. But you can prevent that from happening.
Yes.
You could actually prevent that from happening. Not all your bosses are going to be father figures like Mac Brown was.
No. That's not the way that works.
This is the real world. These are professionals. And do they have egos? No question. But how do you fix that? I mean, just the Elway situation jumped into my mind because that's what John Elway did.
I'm not going to fall asleep at meetings. I'm going to be right there doing everything. I'm going to be in film study. I'm going to do all those
other things. Well, if you're doing enough things wrong so that the coach can go to the owner and say, look, this guy's lazy. He's a me guy. He's not buying into what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't work with that. You're giving the coach the power to have the control of your career. Where, as I say, with John Elway, when John Elway and got crossed with Dan Reeves, who had been a very successful
everybody
coach,
knew how hard he worked.
He had the power because he was doing things right and not everything that Dan Reeves wanted, but he had built up enough goodwill that no, I'm staying. You're going. And we're going to go win Super Bowls, which John Elway did.
Yeah, and you know the thing about Vince also is he had some pretty stable teammates around him. He had guys that went to the NFL, pretty stable guys that
Well, let's just say it this way. He wasn't prepared for the NFL.
Okay.
He wasn't prepared
young.
For
he was
professional
young.
Life.
Right.
He was used to the bubble that was created here at Texas where everyone loved him. Mac Brown was a father figure that he didn't have. His teammates loved him. You go to Tennessee,
it's a job.
It's everybody's job.
Yeah, it's a job.
And there are egos, and there are backstabbers, and it is...
You're right.
You have to own that, though, because if you're not prepared, it'll eat you up. And we see that all the time in all sports.
And you also have to own your money. I mean, if you lose your money, that's not Jeff Fisher's fault.
We'll come back. We'll do some salacious gossip. Then your blitz at 447-3776. Can't wait to read and really sit down and read this article, which is out this morning from Sports Illustrated. But early glance, we'll read you some more of that. Take your thoughts. It's B&E on the Horn.
Where you get that from? Did Tawana tell you that? Did Tawana tell you that? Because I ain't for no games, okay?
Salacious Gossip is brought to you by Bud Light. Thanks to our friends at Bud Light Always and Brown Distributing. Budweiser, proud supporter of Honor Flight and Honor Flight Austin that transports veterans of World War II, Korea, Vietnam to visit those memorials dedicated to their honor and service and sacrifice in Washington, D.C. all summer long. Those Budweiser America camo bottles are available. Portion of all Budweiser proceeds through the end of this month, through the end of July, I should say, all the way through July, will be donated to the Folds of Honor on a national level and Honor Flight Austin right here in Central Texas. So pick it up, enjoy responsibly all summer long. All right, the gossip is, Buck, I'm still reading through this Vince Young article, and look, this is Jeff Fisher was out to sabotage Vince Young's career. There is no debate about that, and we kind of knew that along the way, but there's more, and it's all from Vince Young's side of it and his tale because Jeff Fisher did not speak to the author of this story.
Mm-hmm.
Nor did Kerry Collins, who Vince Young believes that's why Jeff Fisher was out to sabotage, because he wanted Kerry Collins to be the quarterback and not Vince. And
my, oh my.
So, yeah, but I think even Vince would say at this point, if he were mature enough to handle being a professional and his money and flying right, he would have had the power over Jeff Fisher, because it's, as he says, I had the owner's cell phone number. He could have made a power play if he was doing his own things right.
He wasn't ready.
He wasn't ready.
No.
Plain and simple. That's a shame. And again, we see it's a tragic tale in sports. Not tragic. It's just a shame.
Happens.
Because the greats in the game are the hardest workers combined with the best talent, right? They're the Michael Jordans. They're the Wayne Gretzky's. I mean, they're great players.
They don't take any shortcuts.
But they're the hardest workers.
Yes.
So you combine those two and you get all-time. Vince Young had the talent. He had the all-time talent. But the maturity and the work ethic, that's what breaks you, because it comes so easy when you're playing high school players and college players in a lot of levels, and they put you in a perfect offense.
Not in the pro level, though.
You know, in college, your offense was perfectly designed to suit your talents, and pro's a different beast.
I got to read that. I can't wait to read that.
Me
today.
Too. Me too. You won't like Jeff Fisher very much, and you'll just think, dang, what if he come back for senior year and maybe grow up a little more?
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? Who knows? Those are stories we'll never know. All right, let's get to your headlines. Those are your headlines.
Your blitz,
those
man.
Are your. Let's get to let's your go. Blitz. The phone lines are lit.
The Bucky and E Blitz.
The Morning Blitz brought to you by Apple Leasing, where you only have to pay for the new half of the car or truck, the half under factory warranty, in any make, any model. Click appleleasing.com and see how easy it is.
You know, Oprah never helped me out one bit. Out of all these years I've known her. All right, first blitzer, you're up.
Yeah, I agree. Kevin Sumlin should have been Vince Young's coach in the NFL, so he can make him fat. Oh, wait.
Oh, that's nice. Next that's blitzer. Nice. Next blitzer.
How'd I go with Johnny Manziel?
Next blitzer, you're up.
Hey, Bucky.
Yes.
I think you're wrong, dude. I think Serena would rank number one in getting into the kitchen and making me a sandwich.
Oh.
Next blitzer, you're
think
up.
I don't think she makes much sandwiches.
Hey, Bucky Vato, hey, I'm so depressed about Vince Young. That's horrible. Let's talk about something positive. Coach Hermans and what he's doing, our quarterback went to the Peyton Manning camp. I can see next spring, number one draft, Cleveland Browns select Sean Buccelli, quarterback.
His name is not Buccelli, dude.
And he won't be eligible.
It's not Andrea Buccelli.
He's a true sophomore. He won't
yes.
be eligible for the draft.
Next blitzer, you're up.
Okay, I guess I got to start leaving the house now because the bus stop's like 2 or 3 miles from your station, so...
Yes, time to go, Sean.
Hey, birthday party's in 2 days.
2 days.
Sean.
Leave now.
You're welcome to be here if you can find us.
Next blitzer, you're up.
Yeah, it's a good thing that your quarterback wins the Peyton Manning or the Manning football camp, because the only bad thing about that would be is if your quarterback had to get woken up by 1 o'clock by Archie Manning in the afternoon and asked to never come back to that camp.
Ever again.
Yeah, that was Johnny Manziel's story.
Yeah, it was bad. Next blitzer, you're up.
Hey, Coach 500 Fisher, here's hoping B.Y. catches you at a Cheesecake Factory and Joe Mixon's your jaw.
Oh, man, wow.
Man, Jeff Fisher's going to take it, and should.
Next, Blitzer, talk to us.
Remember when Jeff Fisher sabotaged Vince Young by telling him to get all his nutrition at Cheesecake Factory?
This is not nice. You guys aren't nice. Next, Blitzer, you're up.
Hey, Bucky, I saw you on Monday Night Raw last night.
That was not me. I was not on
that
Raw.
That was LeVar Ball.
Stay in your lane.
I was at poker night. Next blitzer, you're up.
Hey, Bucky.
Yeah.
I just got back from the mailbox. I liked the invite that you sent me, you chump.
I didn't send you any invite.
Shut it down!
Bucky's not producing this birthday party.
No,
I am.
I don't produce
we
your
are.
Own birthday parties, okay?
And by the way, on the way to the break, can we, yesterday in this spot is when they were doing the profile of Ezekiel Elliott in the body issue.
Yes.
To which you were offended.
Yes, I was offended.
This morning, it's tennis player Caroline Wozniacki. Let's just say it's much better.
Oh. I'm looking over here. I haven't seen one all day long.
It was just on for like 6 minutes. Where were you?
Zeke Elliott.
I missed it
15
too.
Times.
It was just on.
Soccer on. I thought this was SportsCenter.
No, it was just on, right? Same channel. Caroline Wozniacki.
Yeah, DVR in here.
When did soccer become a sport anyway?
It hasn't.
When your kids all went to college
for free.
Scholarship.
Yeah, I guess.
It's not a sport. It's a sport, whether you like it or not. There's no debate whether it's a sport or not. We'll be back. B&E on the Horn. It's 104.9. It's AM 1260. Streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.